All right. Good morning, everybody. Hope you're doing well. Stefan Molyneux from FreeDomain, freedomain.com/donate. To please help out philosophy, help out the show, help out the conversation. Now, there is a podcast called Call Her Daddy. And it is hosted by a woman named Alex. I don't know if there's anyone else. I've just seen her. And she is a skinny, pretty girl. She does the girl thing where they have their sleeves kind of hop up over their hands. It's a kind of funny little thing that women do, is they try to appear like children. Children, of course, parents will buy clothes that are too big for them, right? Obviously, because they have to grow into them. And therefore, if the sleeves are going over the hands, that is kind of a marker for childlike behavior. And childlike plus sexuality is sinister as a whole. It's sinister as a whole. Children speak without thought of consequences, and children speak without a filter, and children speak without a sense of empathy, right? So little kids, you go to the mall, little kids will say, when regarding an overweight person, they will say, why is she so big? Or why is she so fat? They just say, right? And then there's a phase with little kids where they say something that would be considered kind of rude or abrasive or outrageous or whatever. They say something, and then what they do is they laugh at themselves because they're young enough to still get away with it. The sort of truth, so to speak, or bluntness or directness and sometimes rudeness kind of erupts out of them. And then they laugh about it. And they laugh about it because they know that they're still young enough to get away with it. And you see this with little boys where they talk about, you know, poops and farts and things like that. And when they're very young, then they just talk about these things. When they get older, they talk about these things and then laugh about it because it's taboo breaking, but they're still young enough to get away with it. And they find that funny. It's when children begin to get an understanding of the limits of reasonably polite social conversation. But, you know, when you're 5, you can talk about peas and poops and farts, and it's funny, but you can't do that when you're 15 or, you know, sort of puberty, maybe even a little younger. And so on this podcast, you see the same kind of behavior. So in one recent podcast, the host, Alex, I think her name is, her name is Alex. Call her Alex for this show. The host is talking about how you can sleep with a man on the first date if that's what you feel like, if that's what feels right to you and your body. And then she makes fun of a woman, and she imitates the woman who's counseling some form of sexual restraint. And she's like, you shouldn't do that. You're going to be fit. You're going to be looked like a whore. You know, you're going to be looked bad. It's like, yeah, maybe for you, Cassandra, or whatever, some Christian name, obviously. And she says that you can kiss him, you can not kiss him, you can, and she's very coarse, right? She uses the F-bombs for sexuality, which, you know, obviously I swear from time to time, but there's just a coarseness in this as a whole. I will do it sometimes to shock people out of complacency or if I'm really frustrated, but she just does it in a sort of casual way, talking about coitus as effing, which it's kind of animalistic in a way. And so she says that if you can let him hit it from the back, and I don't think she's talking doggy. I think she was meaning anal. And then right after she says that, she giggles and laughs as if shocked at her own bluntness. And again, with the hands half covering, and there are even little sleeves, right, that they go over the thumb and keep the sleeves covering, half covering the hands. So she's sitting in a sort of cross-legged position in a very big couch. She's a very slender woman and so on. And she also has a youthful voice. I don't know how old she is. But the oversized couches are there to make her look like a little kid. Again, I'm not saying this is conscious, right? The way she sits kind of cross-legged on the couch is kind of how kids sit on, little kids sit on couches. The fact that she has these big baggy clothing makes her look smaller and younger. The fact that she has her sleeves half covering her hands makes her look more like a child. And the fact that she says, you know, I mean, some truly shocking and outrageous things. The fact that she says them and then giggles and widens her eyes and laughs at her own daring audacity is, again, just imitating the guilelessness of a child. But of course, the horrifying nature of a childlike woman who's saying, do what feels right to you, do what feels right to your body, that is also how a child behaves. A child behaves in a way that feels good for the body. If you want your M&Ms, you eat your M&Ms. If you want your big slice of cake, you eat your big slice of cake. No theory, no thought of consequences, no thought of long-term effects, no thought of cavities or weight gain or diabetes or like do what feels right for you in the moment is a child's philosophy. Hedonism is arrested development. Hedonism is a toddler plus sex and adult addictions, like, well, sex and drinking and drugs and so on. So when you have this woman, girl, child babbling on and giggling about in through the outdoor sexual activity, and then wide-eyed laughing at her own audacity, and then using a childlike voice to imitate another female and saying, do what feels right for you, do what feels good for you and your body. That is, so the demonic in a way, and I of course use this allegorically, but the demonic is simply toddlerhood plus adult consequences and adult freedoms. Toddlerhood, which is hedonism plus adulthood, is promoted because toddlers need authority. Toddlers need others to teach them that they can't just live by hedonism, or to put it another way, toddlers need externalized consequences. In other words, the toddler will want to eat the whole jar of cookies. I remember my brother and I, one night, we had they had these trays of little flat chocolate mints called After Eights. I'm sure they still have them around. And we were giggling and chatting when we were very little. And again, I don't know why we were alone so much, but you know, I mean, my mom was out there trying to secure a date and a mate. And we were giggling and chatting, and we kept reaching in and finding, they came in these little plastic pouch, sorry, these little paper pouches, little sort of vertical. They were tiny little envelopes with the chocolates in them. And we would take a chocolate out and we would eat it and we would giggle. And then we would not take out the wafer paper, like the little envelope that the chocolate mints came in, the sort of flat chocolate mints. And we just kept reaching around until there were like no more chocolates in there. And that's what you do when you're little kids. You need someone external to put limits upon you, right? So promoting toddlerhood is, dare I say it, it's backdoor statism. Because if you promote toddlerhood with adult responsibilities and consequences, then people who act in a hedonistic, which is to say toddler plus adult desires way, they need external limits. They need external control. So when you tell people to be hedonistic, you are promoting totalitarianism, because hedonistic people end up with disastrous lives. I mean, truly disastrous lives. So if you're a hedonist and you drink too much, you eat too much, you have too much sex, you get fat, you get liver disease, you get you have maybe kids outside of wedlock, or you get STDs, you burn out your capacity to pair bond, so you're isolated. And in particular, isolated women always look for authority. That's kind of baked into the genetics. And so when you promote mindless toddler plus adult desires hedonism, then you are creating an endless stream of human disasters that require or demand freedom from consequences. So, you know, do what feels right for your body. And this, of course, by a woman who is obviously very hardworking and obviously diets pretty ferociously to remain her very slender frame. So, of course, we'll get to sort of how this works with intersexual competition. Looked at Anne Hathaway saying that she's promoting overweight actresses while remaining very slender herself. Of course, that's just, it's kind of inevitable that way, that attractive women, particularly as they age, will promote unattractive habits or standards for other women in the way of, right? The entrepreneur wants to promote laziness to his competition, so he has a monopoly on the hard work that is most likely to lead to success. Ah, you work too hard. Ah, you should take it easy. When was the last time you had a vacation? You know, you should see your kids more. Life isn't all about work, right? I mean, and goes back and does his 80-hour weeks, right? It's kind of natural. It's a very, I mean, it's direct form of sabotage in a way, right? It's very obvious. So, yeah, her promoting hedonism while looking anorexic is, of course, sabotage. It is not. But it's tempting, right? It's tempting to get off the fence, right? And just go one way or the other, right? So everyone to some degree or another, I shouldn't say everyone. I know that I do. I battle with food. I mean, it's not a huge grim battle, but I have to constantly remind myself to not eat as much. I mean, it's partly because I have a big appetite. I work out. And it's also growing up hungry. I constantly wanted to overeat because I was never quite sure where my next calories were coming from. And look, I get that's a pathetic excuse. I mean, this is all like 40, 50 years ago, but you know, it's kind of hardwired, and I've done a pretty good job of battling food. I am neither an ascetic who, you know, doesn't eat too much, and neither am I overweight. So I'm sort of got a balance, and I've had to scale down my eating over the years just because as you age, and I weigh the same now as I did when I was 18. Although it could be argued that the distribution is it's a little bit different. What's that old line from the British comedy? This woman talks about like, "Yes, my butt, I can feel it back there snacking." It's kind of funny. So everybody wants to fall. With regards to the question of hedonism versus self-restraint, it's a battle, right? I mean, you want to have your body enjoy things. And you also want your body to be healthy. And if you punish your body, that's like the anorexics and so on, or the bulimics. If you punish your body by depriving it, that's kind of unhealthy. If you indulge your body by following its every whim and pleasure, that tends to be unhealthy as well. So in the, you know, reasonable battle between long-term desires, we could say, and short-term desires and long-term desires, right? It is important to balance these things. But it's a challenge to balance these things. We are a multiplicity of preferences, right? You know, the old thing that you're tired in the morning, you want to sleep in, but you got to get up and go to work because you need an income. And right? So it's just this sort of battle. If you've had a really busy day, maybe you want to read or scroll late at night, because maybe it feels like it's the only time you've had for yourself. But you know it's going to shave away your sleep and all of that, right? If you're having a great time, like I was at a party recently, a very fun party, and the hors d'oeuvres kept coming, and they were good, man. They were good. And yeah, I will admit to have snacked a little bit too much. And I remember I was at the party. There was hors d'oeuvres, there was a main course, I had a little bit of dessert, and then it's funny, like I went for an after party, and there were more snacks there, and I was like, I could eat, and I'm like, man, what are you doing? You don't need to eat. You are officially full. Your gas tank is overflowing, and you're still pumping. So these kinds of shows, what they do is they offer people an answer. And the answer is, you should do what your body dictates and demands, or requests. The body doesn't really demand stuff except maybe air and pooping. But you should do what your body wants. Do what feels right for your body. Do what feels right for you. Which is a sort of witchy, candlelight, Ouija board, self-affirming kind of witchery. I mean, it's just being a witch, right? It's Satanism, do what they will, shall be the whole of the law, right? Do what feels good for you, do what feels right, do what you want, do what you like, you know, all that kind of nonsense, right? And of course, because there is a grain of truth in it, that you do have to please your body as well as you have to please your body in the now and in the future, right? What's that line from dieting women, right? When they're looking at a snack, once on the lips, forever on the hips. Nothing tastes as good as thin feels kind of thing, right? But of course, people who are very skinny tend to be kind of neurotic and a little out of their body because they're too dictatorial and dominant to their body's needs and requests. Obviously there's exceptions, but that's sort of what I've noticed. So this promotion of toddlerhood is giving people an answer to one of the natural tensions in life, which is what your body wants now and what you need in the future. I was reading, you sort of notice that, you know, people like Clint Eastwood and so on, like the people who make it to significant old age are skinny, right? And you think, oh, you know, okay, so if I'm skinny, maybe that gives me a couple of years extra of life. And, you know, like, am I going to look back and say, I'm really glad I had those hors d'oeuvres at the party if it cost me a couple of years of life? And then I was reading that the people who tend to live the longest have a little bit of fat around the middle. I don't know. I mean, I think everybody fantasizes about getting really thin. And I've thought about it. And I mean, my problem is that if I go to bed hungry, I can't sleep. So it's a challenge. And again, we're just trying to sort of be on these balance beams, right? And these balance beams that, you know, people are dialing up and down the gravity and shaking the beams because, you know, you have different requirements over different courses of your life. I do sometimes think, though, because I eat a lot, and I do sometimes think, like, I mean, again, I exercise like 4 times a week, and I walk at least 10,000 steps a day. So, I mean, that's not like a big calorie thing, but, you know, it burns off some. And I do sometimes wonder, like, holy crap, for people who really gain weight, like, how much are you eating? It's really wild. And sometimes you see these sort of secret eaters shows where they follow people who say, you know, I'm dieting, but I just can't seem to lose weight. Like they're defying the laws of physics. And then they follow them around and they find that they are actually eating, you know, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 calories a day. And that's why they can't. That's why they can't lose weight. It's just math. So there's a relief, you know, in the tension of, you know, women want sex, of course, and it's a natural human desire and a healthy human desire. The women want sex, and women also want commitment, and they want security, and a lot of them want children and so on, right? And, you know, do I put out or not is a big, challenging question for women. Especially, I mean, it used to be better when women didn't break ranks all the time and sleep with other guys on the first date. But the question of should I put out or not is tough. And it has to do with, you know, if you end up with a good marriage and you end up with a happy partnership and so on, then you get a lifetime of great sex. You know, assuming no major medical issues, you end up with a lifetime of great sex. So that's cool. We like that, right? And so, again, it's, do I give up my flower to a backdoor man on the first date, or do I hold out and then end up with great sex for my whole life with a wonderful, loving partner with whom I am pair bonded and trust, and, you know, we know what each other like, and, you know, all of that kind of stuff, right? So it's, you know, now versus later, right? Do I have happiness in eating a lot of calories now, let's say sugar now? Well, that makes me happy, but that means that down the road, I have the unhappiness of being overweight and the shame and the ill health and the potential diabetes and the shortened lifespan, all that kind of stuff, right? At the same time, you know, there are people who are thin and miserable and neurotic and tense, and they also have a terrible relationship with food a lot of times. They view food as the enemy, and they're all complicated and wrapped up and stressed and all that kind of stuff, right? So, yeah, she's offering, you know, look, here's the answer. Just do what you want. And anyone who gives you restraint is like a stuck-up prude Christian Cassandra, who's can't enjoy things in life, right? So she's just offering this sort of demonic solution to the problem, which is, yeah, you know what? In the tension between now and later, in the tension between food and slenderness, in the tension between sex now and sex later, just choose it in the now. And anyone who tells you otherwise is a stuck-up prude. So this offering up this relief or release from tension, you can just do whatever you want, you can just do whatever you feel like, you do what is right for you, you do what is good for you. It's a great relief, of course, for a lot of people, right? This is a great relief. And it's like, finally, I have the answer. Oh, thank goodness. And the answer is, just do what I want, right? Just do what I want and all will be well. Do what feels right. Now, of course, that is not much of a rational answer, because if, say, for instance, somebody said, I feel like I hate women, right? They say, I feel like I hate women or minorities or white. Well, I guess whites is okay, right? But if they say, I feel like I dislike this particular group, of course, nobody would say, no problem. Then what you should do is you should indulge in that feeling, right? Act on your passions is only for that which captures voters for the left, right? Got to understand that, right? This is this sort of old joke that every ethnicity can have pride except whites, because that makes you a Nazi, that kind of racist stuff. And so you are allowed to indulge in every passion that captures you for leftist voting. If you allow men to hit every orifice on the first date, then it's depressing. It's sad. Just from the point of view of men, and I've talked to a lot of men about this over the years, of course, it's just sad. A woman who engages in sexual activity on the first date is a tragic, tragic figure. Because obviously she's not vetting, she's not safe, she's not testing for STDs, she's not testing for compatibility, she's not testing for basic safety. It's desperate. And it indicates a very depressed and negative self-image. And this, to me, comes back to the whole question of corruption, which is corruption, is it driven by demand or by supply? In other words, is it supply creates its own demand, like people didn't know they needed an iPad until there was such a thing as an iPad? Does supply create its own demand? In other words, women listen to this hellish witch and they say, I guess I can just go and indulge my lusts. So Sheryl Sandberg said the same kind of thing, go sleep in this book, Leaning In. And she was at Facebook, her husband died, young-ish. And Sheryl Sandberg was like, go sleep with everybody. Go sleep with everybody. And then when you're settled down, you can change your standards and blah, blah, blah. And the people who sell you the upside with no downside are demonic, right? And that's sort of what I'm talking about foundationally. So people who say, well, of course, you should just sleep around, right? And there's no downside to it. It's all upside. It's all you being empowered, baby, and getting what you want and doing what you need and resisting that
very stuck-up prude Cassandra.
There's no downside. Like, why would you not just go and F anybody with a pulse who you find interesting or exciting? Why wouldn't you just follow your lusts? And would she say that about food? Just eat whatever tastes good, eat whatever you like, indulge in every appetite when it comes to food. She sure is not doing that, because if she was 200 pounds, she would not have a successful podcast. Because the alpha females, as she would be, date the alpha males, or date an alpha male, or marry an alpha male, and the alpha male has friends and brothers and so on, cousins, who are also probably very high status. And for women, you cannot speak out against the alpha female, otherwise she will cut and mock and restrict your access to who you perceive to be higher quality people, or at least like higher status people. And of course, for most of our evolution, higher status was the same as higher quality. Moral considerations are relatively new in the sort of million plus year of human evolution. Moral considerations have been only the last maybe few thousand years at best for a small minority. So it's a pretty new phenomenon. So she obviously doesn't indulge in her lust. She stays slender. She has a skincare routine that I'm sure is quite boring. And she takes good care of her hair and her teeth and all of that. And so, yeah, promoting this sort of lazy, lax hedonism to others is this intrasexual competition, wherein if you, again, this isn't counting if you are very pretty, right? She's very pretty and very slender and so on. And so this doesn't sort of count that. Those women always land on their feet, so to speak. I mean, like cats, right? They'll always land on their feet. I mean, even somebody who has had an OnlyFans career can find a man to marry her and give her a baby. So we're not sort of talking about that. What she's saying is that I'm pretty enough that I can sleep around and still get a man to commit to me. Now, whether you have a good marriage and a healthy marriage and a happy marriage, I don't think so. I don't think so. But she's saying, I can do these things that are negative. I can be a armpit shaved, woo woo, hands above the head party girl, and I can still get a man to marry me. But if you're an average looking woman, then your options are significantly diminished. Because she's saying, I'm so pretty that I don't have to be a moral person. But if you're not super pretty, I mean, I recommend judging on the qualities of character no matter what, but if you're not super pretty, then you're going to be chosen based on the qualities of your character, right? And so she is wrecking most women's chances. Again, you know, I wish it wasn't this way. You know, this is descriptive, not prescriptive, but in the world it is, very pretty girls will always have sims to marry them. I mean, it's evolution, right? 40% of men, sometimes more, didn't reproduce, and so beggars can't be choosers. And so the very attractive women will always have some simp to take care of them. I mean, unless they go super mad like Zelda Fitzgerald. F. Scott Fitzgerald's wife ended up spending 12 years in an asylum after obsessively measuring her thighs in her youth, and then ended up being burned to death in a terrible fire. Just a horrible, horrible exit. I mean, they both had horrible exits. And in a sense, deservedly so. So when she says to women, just act, it's aggressive intrasexual competition based on, I don't know, really cruel and horrible metrics, or it's a genuine blindness to what life is like for less attractive people. What is life like for less attractive? I mean, she's charming, she's got some charisma, she's attractive, she's got a nice voice, she's obviously intelligent, she's very verbal, podcast host of a very successful podcast. So she has a lot of, she has a lot of positive qualities from a neutral standpoint, right? And because she has a lot of positives from a neutral standpoint, she has a lot of strengths, cynicism, intelligence, some wit, some charm, attractiveness, obviously self-disciplined. And so she has a lot of positive attributes. And so she can make mistakes. She can sleep around. I don't know if she did or didn't. Maybe she did. I don't know. But she can do all of these things and a guy will date and marry her because she's pretty. But that's not the case. That's decidedly not the case for average-looking women. Average-looking women are going to be chosen more so based on the qualities of their character. You know, like the fat guy has to be funny. And if you're not very attractive physically, I mean, average, right? There's nothing wrong with average. It is, of course, the middle. of the road. But if you are not very attractive, then the quality of your character is what matters. You know, your kindness, consideration, caring, thoughtfulness, pair bonding, and that is going to be the most wrecked by promiscuity. So a woman, in a sense, who's attractive and promiscuous is saying, I'm so attractive that I can ruin my character and men will still want me. And, you know, again, sadly, that's true. That's true. Men will still want her because she's pretty and slim. But she's wrecking chances for average women. And I don't know if that's conscious. You know, that the real privilege is not even being conscious of your privilege. So if she's saying, look, I can do these wild things, I can do these crazy things, I can do these dangerous things, I can do these, you know, kind of gross and self-loathing things, and men will still want me, that's how pretty I am. Well, and again, I don't know if that's conscious or unconscious or the motive behind it, but it is absolutely destructive to the odds of success for the average person. And another example would be if some guy wins the lottery or inherits out of nowhere $10 million, right? I used to be able to say $1 million, but inflation, man. So someone gets, through no particular earning, gets $10 million. Then that person is going to say, you know, you shouldn't be in a hurry to choose your career. You should really figure things out over time. Don't jump into things that you're not ready for. Don't work at a job you hate. You know, these kinds of things, right? And he's going to have all of this advice. And all of this advice works fairly well for people who have $10 million in the bank. It doesn't work so well for people who are poor. Now, it's one thing to suddenly get $10 million. At least you grew up without the money. But people who are born attractive, people who are born very pretty or very handsome, they do not understand their privilege. It's really hard for them to understand their privilege. You know, like all the tall guys, you know, with great hair and the, you know, Dan Bilzerian macho Norse beards and things like that. Although he's got a kind of Middle Eastern vibe. I don't know where he's from. But those guys are like, you know, just approach women with confidence and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, but that doesn't work well for the high forehead, chinless wanderers of the world. You know, Melania Trump can have that steely-eyed, narrow-lidded, slightly feral gaze that she has probably out of her modeling career. And that works well for her. It does not work well for average-looking women to do the model face. You know, that vaguely angry, impatient, just hopped off the haunches of a Siberian tiger gaze, right? I mean, it works for very attractive women. It does not work for less attractive women. I mean, you see these videos of like, to do your model face, do sort of X, Y, and Z. And then people who are average looking try to do the model face and they just look ridiculous, right? So people who are born that attractive, and I don't know if she was born wealthy or comes from a wealthy family and so on. I think her mother was Catholic, her father was Jewish. So I what do I know, right? But if she's born that attractive and that vivacious, and vivacity comes with attractiveness, then she's going to have privileges that she may not even be particularly aware of. I mean, heck, even coming from a relatively stable and loving family gives you privileges that are hard to be aware of. So if she says, well, look, I can make all these kinds of mistakes, like if your father is the chief of police and you're never going to go to jail, then yeah, you can go out and do goofy, stupid, illegal stuff. And you say, oh, you know, you should have your wild years. You should push the envelope. You should test the limits of society, blah, 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 blah. It's like, well, yeah, but your dad is the chief of police, so you're never going to jail, right? Assuming that's a setup. So maybe you're just not aware of it. Maybe you're not aware because you lack empathy that you're giving bad advice to people that works for you because of your privileges, your high status, your protection from consequences. You know, if you've got $10 million in the bank, you're largely protected from bad financial decisions. I mean, assuming they're not $10 million in $1. And if you have beauty as a female, then you are protected from bad decisions. If an unattractive woman brags to a man about having done Mrs. Clooney, that's not the real Mrs. Clooney, just the first name, on the first date, then it's kind of gross. If an attractive, a really hot woman talks about it, then it's actually exciting for men. Again, I'm not saying this is good or right. It just is what is, right? We are animals first, humans second, and rational third, if we're lucky or if we work at it. Now, the other thing, of course, is that she keeps having these celebrities on who say the most appalling things. She had Gwyneth Paltrow on, who dated Brad Pitt, was Coldplay guy's wife for a while, and I can't remember, dated a bunch of other famous people. Ben Affleck. I think she was Ben Affleck's girlfriend. And I think, so the Alex character, the Alex host, she asked Gwyneth Paltrow, who's better in bed, Brad Pitt or Ben Affleck? I think it was those two. And she was like, Brad Pitt was the love of my life. There was lots of passion, but, Ben Affleck was technically proficient. I don't know what that means. He's good at fidget spinners. I don't know. But, and the woman is sort of leaning in, the host, and then giggling and laughing and just encouraging her to spill her guts. And Gwyneth Paltrow is like, oh my God, my daughter's watching this and blah, 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 right? But she can't resist because she can say, I mean, she's a rich and famous and talented and attractive movie star. And so she should be able to have boundaries, right? But if she goes on the Call Her Daddy podcast, boy, it would be fun to have Camille Paglia on there. But if she goes on the Call Her Daddy podcast, and if the host says, who's a better lover, this movie star or that movie star? And if she were to say, look, I'm not talking about my private life on this podcast, that's private. And I'm sure that the men don't want me talking about it. I mean, I sure wouldn't want the men talking about how good or bad I was in bed, whether I was an acrobat or a starfish. So I'm not going to do that to them. And it's, kind of a little inappropriate for you to ask those questions. Well, what would happen? Well, there might be some, I'll concede to your Cassandra-ness, your prudery. And then there would be this mockery of her and she would be excluded from the cool girls' lunch table, which I guess is still pretty important to a lot of people. And there would be this rejection and this hostility and this mockery. I mean, if you try to set boundaries, you'll be mocked by dysfunctional people. And so you can't. I mean, can you imagine if I'm on some podcast and somebody asks me about my sex life? Like, oh my God, I'm not talking about that. Like, and I would probably leave. And then, of course, the baying hounds of people without boundaries are summoned and they mock and roll their eyes. What a prude. And it's just natural, man. It's all human. It's like, so there is that aspect as well that she is encouraging and laughing. And of course, she's looking for her viral clips, right? So she's looking for shocking, gossipy, sexual, dysfunctional, whatever. She had, was it Hilary Duff on, who was talking about how she didn't want a good guy and just wanted a bad boy after her divorce and so on, and didn't like the guy who wooed her because he was too nice. And then she had some other woman on, again, I can't remember her name, Zoe or something like that, who was talking about when she was 16 and she made out with her best friend's boyfriend, and it was filmed and sent to her best friend before she could explain it. And then she said she was just a piece of floating trash in the universe that nobody would talk to. And that's your viral clip, right? So she's aiming for that viral clip. She's aiming for that success. And she's monetizing people's insecurities. Because if you're asked inappropriate questions, then you should, of course, say, I'm not answering that. And in a sense, how dare you ask it? And these celebrities, they want to go viral too. I guess everybody just wants to trade privacy and decorum and so on for money and fame. And it's kind of sad. And this opening up, I mean, can you imagine? Imagine someone you sleep with becomes famous and then talks about your sex life to tens of millions of people. Wretched, a horrifying and horrible invasion of privacy. It's like a verbal sex tape. And that is not good at all. That is not good at all. So yeah, I find the whole phenomenon interesting. I don't imagine I'll ever spend time listening to a full show. Somebody was commenting, I don't know if it's true, that girls in high school were listening to this Call Her Daddy podcast in order to learn how to give BJs and so on. And, you know, there's a price to be paid. And anybody who says to you, the answer is just X, you know, like I've always said, look, I think it's important to be more moral than rational, but recognize it's going to come at what feels like sometimes an almost unbearable cost. And it does. It is. So I'm giving you the downside. Like being rational, being moral will give you love. It will give you a good relationship with your own conscience, but it will also summon the demons of the self-destroyed to howl and berate you at every opportunity. And all of that is demonic. To say, well, we're just going to help the poor and not talk about any downsides of that or any risks or potential problems. Or just do this, just do that. Or you just follow your body, do what your body likes, do what your body wants. And there's no downside. And anybody who tells you that there might be a downside to rampant promiscuity is just
a Cassandra and a prude. And maybe that's fine for you, you stuck-up church lady. You know, that kind of stuff, right? That's kind of demonic. There are costs and benefits to almost every decision in life. And people who hide that from you are kind of destroying you. I hope this makes sense. I'd love to hear what you think. freedomain.com/donate. Thank you, friends. Bye.